Well, last week we finished chapter 5. You may remember in verse number 48, Christ said to the disciples, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." And so I reminded us last week that the goal of the Christian and the ambition and the desire of the Christian should be that we would reach a state of perfection. And while that should be our desire, while that should be our goal and what we strive for, we also have to keep in mind the reality of life, that we are humans. And because we are humans, perfection is not anything that we will ever achieve. However, the word perfect also meant to be complete or to be whole or to be mature. And so I did try to remind us of this, that while we will never reach a state of perfection, we can reach a state of spiritual maturity in our Christian lives. We do not have to stay immature. We do not have to stay a baby in our walk with the Lord. You and I can mature. We can progress. We can become more like Him. And as Christ was dealing with that statement, He did so with the context. And last week we watched as He had built upon the statement, "This is what you have heard, this is what's been said, that thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies." And we talked about last week how that requires maturity in the spiritual life, in the Christian life, to love your enemies, to do good to people that you don't like, to do good to people that seem to make your life miserable and enjoy that. He said also a mark of maturity is when we bless those that curse us. When we wish well upon those who do not wish well upon us. That is a sign of maturity. And then at the last part, he said, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Those that would do you wrong, those who would harass you, those who, again, would make your life miserable, you pray for them and you ask the Lord to work in their life. That is difficult. And I said last week, if somebody tells you it's not difficult, they're not doing it. Because it is difficult to live that part of the Christian life. And Christ pointed to God as the perfect example. He said, our Father, God, in verse number 45, He said He sends rain upon the good, He makes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth the rain on the just and on the unjust. God is good to all people, whether they are good to Him, whether they love Him the way that they should or not. And so He is the perfect example. And then I thought of this after the message concluded last week. Christ Himself, while hanging on the cross, what did He do? He prayed for those. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And so we look to Christ, we look to God as our perfect example, and we say, that's what I'm supposed to achieve, or that's what I'm supposed to strive for. Not easy, but it's what we're supposed to shoot for in the Christian life. Okay? I say that because I promise you we need the reminder. I could probably afford to re-preach the entire message and us go, yeah, I still need to work on that one. But because you don't want me to, I'm not going to, so we'll move on tonight. But tonight I want to share with you a couple of stories, and please be patient as I work through this. But tonight I want you to think that about going to church with my parents. I know you probably wouldn't think about that. You might say, why would I go to church with your parents? Well, just work with me here in this scenario. Tonight, if you were to go to church with my parents, you'd see a lot of people pass by you. Most of them wouldn't even get your attention. But tonight I want to talk to you about two men that may walk by you that you probably would not notice. Men who are just very normal. Men who are just very seemingly average in their daily lives. One works at a school. Another is an appliance repairman. Nothing overly impressive about those professions, right? I didn't say one of them's an astronaut and one of them's a rocket scientist. Just one works for a school. One is an appliance repairman. They are just average Joes. They are just average men, run-of-the-mill, nothing that you would be impressed by just by way of their appearance. That said, if somebody were to begin talking about these two men, something may come up in conversation that these men have in common. And that is this: both of these men are highly decorated Vietnam veterans. Highly decorated Vietnam veterans. But here's the thing. Though people know they're highly decorated, what people who know that, though they are highly decorated veterans, no one really knows for sure what they are decorated for. There's a reason why no one really knows, because they don't want to talk about it. It's not something they want to discuss. It's not something they need to bring up to be happy. It's not something that they're going to work into conversation. It's just that certain people know because certain people know, and they've said things. Did you know that he is a very highly decorated soldier? Did you know that he is a very highly decorated veteran? Did you know that he has seen some serious military combat? And so things are known, but they're not really known. You just know, wow, those guys are highly decorated, but you won't hear them talk about it because to them, it was just doing what they were supposed to be doing. And it's done, and it's in the past. There's a man in our life, in my family's life, that has been a part of my life, I would guess, for at least 30 years. I can promise you there is nothing special about this man. He is a cut-up. He's a kid at heart in a lot of ways. A lot of times you'd like to slap him and say, get serious, please. But a few years ago, my parents went on vacation with he and his wife, and they went to Washington, D.C. And this guy who is always a cut-up that you can hardly ever get serious, just annoying sometimes, went to the Vietnam Wall Memorial and stood in front of the wall there. And if you've ever seen it in person, you know how amazing and how impressive that monument is. And my parents said it was amazing to watch this man who we've known for all these years stand in front of that wall and find several names on that wall. And they said he just stood there and wept. Just stood there and wept. And it's my understanding that the wife has said you cannot get him to talk about what he saw while he was in Vietnam. He doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to discuss it. He doesn't want to address it. He will laugh. He will cut up. He will tease. He will not get serious about so many things in life. But as he stood in front of that wall, he just stood there and wept because it reminded him of service of years gone by. Now, those are just three men that I could tell you about. Probably some of you could say, hey, I know somebody who sounds a lot like that, somebody who's highly decorated, someone who's done a lot for our country, whatever your scenario or story may be, but you're not going to hear these people talk about it. And I think of men like that, and then I contrast or compare their way of life to that of someone like dear Brian Williams. Do y'all know who Brian Williams is? Oh, yeah. He's NBC's nightly newsman. See, Brian Williams is the man who supposedly, best he can remember, flew in some missions with SEAL Team 6. Brian Williams is a man who supposedly was in a convoy of helicopters, if that's the right way to describe it, and his helicopter was shot down by a rocket-propelled grenade. Upon further reflection, maybe it wasn't my helicopter, maybe it was the one in front of me. Well, as that helicopter went down, and then our helicopter went down, if memory serves me right, we were like in the desert for like 3 days waiting for us to get saved or rescued from the situation, whatever it may be. And it's kind of interesting. He can't even remember what he supposedly experienced. But he was more than happy to report what had happened to him, though it had never happened to him. So here's a man, if you do the math, I mean, if you do the research and do the math, you find that here's a man making $10 million a year to report the news. And it wasn't enough for him to just report the news as it was. He had to make himself a part of the news, and he had to say, I was in the helicopter that was shot down. Okay, well, I was a part of the convoy that one of the helicopters was shot down, and I was with Navy SEAL Team 6 when they went in and did this, and only to discover that the Navy says we don't let any embedded reporters go with us on certain missions or on any missions. And you ask yourself this question. Why would Brian Williams make up the stories that he made up? Why would he say all the things that he has said about things that he has supposedly done? And you get down to this, the bottom line is this, it's all about pride. And exalting and promoting oneself. Trying to impress the audience who would be listening to his stories. Trying to impress the peers that would be listening to the stories. Whomever he thought the story could sell to, that is who he was hoping to impress. That is who he was hoping to convince that these things had happened to him. And I find it amazing that you look at these three men in my life that I know, and again, you probably know men in a very similar position as I do. They are not one to beat their own chest. They're not one to sound their own horn. They're just content to say, you know what, I served and that's what I did and I don't need to talk about it to be happy. And then over here you've got this moron who says, let me tell you how great and wonderful I am, even though it isn't true. Now what's the principle or the purpose behind all that? Well, Christ, in visiting and dealing with and speaking to his disciples, is going to enter into your Christian life, your Christian service. He's going to begin addressing their Christian life, their Christian service, and in turn, our Christian life and our Christian service. And here's what we've got to remember, and here's what we've got to keep in mind. The pride of Brian Williams that we would quickly condemn and say, how dare him say something like this? How dare him do something like this? The pride that Brian Williams is guilty of, well, it's been around for thousands of years, has it not? It's not as though he were the inventor of pride. It's not as though he were the first person to stumble because of his pride. And we ought to remember this, that it's not the last person in Brian Williams who will struggle with pride. It will continue as long as men and women exist. And we've got to remember this, that many times our own pride has gotten in our own way and messed us up. And if we're not careful, our pride can get in our way and mess us up again in the future. When it comes to my Christian life, when it comes to my Christian service, if I'm not careful, follow this, if I'm not careful, my pride can get in the way of my Christian service. And so for the next few messages, we're going to be dealing with this principle and we're going to be dealing with this subject. But Christ in verse number 1 is going to begin addressing the subject of alms. Notice in verse number 1, he says, take heed that ye do not your alms before men. What does it mean when Christ speaks of alms? Well, alms was an act of charity. It was giving to charity or giving to someone or something in need. 2,000 years ago, as Christ walked on this earth, there were people and there were institutions and there were things that had needs associated with them. Okay, so understand, please, that just as it is today, it was also back then that there were people and there were institutions and there were things that found themselves in need. And Christ said this, take heed that ye do not your alms before men. Now, what does it mean when Christ says to take heed? Well, it means this. Be careful. Use caution. Be careful, take heed, use caution, that ye do not your alms or your giving to charity, your giving to that someone or something in need. Be careful that when you do this, you do not do it before men or in front of men to be seen of them.
Right. Amen.
Now, notice, please, what the assumption is. The assumption is that you will give alms. I can say that that's thrilling to some. There is an assumption on the part of Christ that men, you will be generous and you will be giving and you will be charitable. You're not going to be a tightwad. You're not going to be this person who takes everything you've got and says, no, that's mine, and no, that's mine, and no, that's mine. And I don't have to give to this, and I don't have to give to this, and I don't have to give to that. No, there is an assumption on the part of Christ that the men that he is speaking to by way of being followers of Christ, that they will be generous and that they will be charitable to those things around them, to those people around them who would be in need. So let's just deal with that very quickly. If Christ were alive today, you know what there would still be by way of assumption on his part toward us? That we would be charitable. And that we would be generous. And that we would be giving. Now, why is that important to consider? Because there are many people today who identify themselves as Christians, and when it comes to being charitable, they want to know, what is the absolute minimal amount that I must give in order to still be okay with God? How much do I have to give? Well, we would say 10%. So here's what they do. They get their calculator out and they get it down to 10%. It's $143.16. Why? Because I want to keep every other penny that belongs to me. There are some people who are of the mindset, listen, I am poor and I am needy and I am the one who is in need of assistance, so I can't afford to give. And that is not what should figure into the thought process of God's children. God's children should be of the mindset that no matter what situation I am in, no matter what position I am in, I will still find the ability to be charitable with those who are in need. There's really no place for stinginess in the life of Christianity. There is no place for a tight fist in the life of a Christian. You and I should be charitable, giving, generous people. But he says, take heed, be careful, use caution, that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them. What's Christ saying? Christ is saying this: you want to be careful that the only reason you don't give is so that other people see that you are giving. I'm supposed to be charitable. I'm supposed to be generous. I am supposed to be giving. But what I have got to guard against and what I have got to be careful with and what I've got to use caution with is this: to not give simply for the purpose of being able to be seen by someone else and someone else say something like this, man, Kyle is a generous individual. Because see, if we're not careful, here's what'll happen. We'll get wrapped up into the idea of giving, not because we know it's what we're supposed to do, and not because we know it's an act of obedience, but we will be giving or we will be generous for the purpose of being seen by others. It happens, does it not? It happens all the time. I probably should know this. I don't remember, so I am saying I know it's happened in other churches. I wouldn't be surprised if it's happened at our church. But I've heard it said by treasurers that it's not uncommon for them to get empty offering envelopes in the offering plate. Now chew on that for just a moment. Why would someone put an empty offering envelope in the offering plate as it passed by in a church service? To give off the appearance of, everybody, I want you to know that I'm a giver. So here's what I'll do. I'll just grab an offering envelope and I'll act like I'm putting something in it. It's amazing how deceptive people can be, is it not? In an effort to impress those that they're sitting beside or those that they're supposedly worshiping with. And so here's what I'll do. I'll grab an envelope. I won't put anything in it. I'll just mess with it for a couple of minutes. I'll act like I'm writing something on it, and then I'll put it upside down inside the offering plate and it'll be empty, but at least in the eyes of men, I will look generous. It's kind of pathetic, is it not? Well, let me ask you this. How many of us have ever known philanthropists? And what do they want to do? They want to give large amounts of money. Many times to good and noble causes. But it's amazing, is it not, how you begin to see their name popping up on certain things because of all of their wonderful philanthropy? And so you've got this foundation, and you've got this wing, and you've got this, and you've got this, and you've got this, and it's named after them. Why? Because I'm giving, and I'm giving, and I'm giving. But as I give, I want to make sure that people know I'm giving, and that I'm generous, and I'm benevolent, and I'm kind, and I'm helping out all these wonderful charitable works. There are people who give, not just to a church, but to many good things in society, for the purpose of being seen, for the purpose of feeding their own pride. If we're not careful, we can give to certain things, not for the reason or for the movement of the Lord on our heart to say, hey, I need to give to this, but because we know that somewhere down the future that will help us in the eyes of the people we're giving to. It happens in communities all the time. I'm going to give some, and I've been solicited by this, so yeah, I'll go ahead and give because I want them to remember in the future that we gave to a certain project that they were raising money for. And so somewhere in the end, I'll get something out of this. That is not why we give to charitable organizations. I'm going to say more about this in a few moments. As unexciting as this may be right now, we do not give anything to any organization for the purpose of being seen by men. You and I are supposed to be generous. You and I are supposed to be giving. We are supposed to be charitable. And we do so because that is what Christians are supposed to be, is just that, charitable individuals. Christ says, take heed that ye do not your alms before men to be seen of them. Otherwise, ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Now, Christ is going to say in verse number 4 that when we do our alms in secret, that the Father will see that and he will reward us openly. But he says in verse number 1, he says, when you give your alms before men for the purpose of being seen by them, for the purpose of being identified, and oh, isn't that a wonderful charitable giver? He says, I want you to know that your Father, which is in heaven, will not reward that act of generosity. I know this is hard to believe, but sometimes people do give money, and I'm not saying it happens in our church because truly I don't believe that it happens, but there are many times people in churches will write large amounts of money or write large amounts of checks. I'm not even saying that correctly. You know what I mean? They give a lot of money for the purpose of being seen in the church. Now, understand, please, you can do that, and the church will take the money, and the church will spend it, and the church will appreciate it, but when it was given just to be seen of men, guess what? There's no eternal reward for that. All you've done is give away money, but there's no eternal blessing in it. If we give to some other charity, if we give to some other individual because the Lord moves upon our heart that we need to do that for them, but we've done it for the purpose of being seen by someone else, well, there's no reward in that. He says in verse number 2, therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. How many of us know what a hypocrite was? A hypocrite was an actor. A hypocrite was one who wanted to give off the perception of being one thing while in fact they were something completely different. The hypocrite back then is the same thing as a hypocrite today. Okay, now I don't know how it would have looked. I don't know how it would have worked in verse number 2 when Christ says that they would sound a trumpet and that they would get the attention of those in the synagogue and in the streets. But somehow there was a way in which they could work it where they could let everyone know who was near them. Just want you to know I'm being charitable. Just want you to know I'm being giving. I just want you to know I'm being generous. How many of us have ever known people and they seem to be charitable, and they seem to be generous, and they seem to be giving. But it was like they weren't content to be all that unless they were first making sure people knew exactly what they were doing. It's like they had to blow their own trumpet and sound their own horn. A couple of months ago, Susie and I were in a furniture store here in town, and we were just visiting with Jack, and we were just talking, and this individual came in, and I mean, truly, I mean, all I did was nod and say hello to the man. I was just trying to be friendly. And this man began to speak to me about a family who was going through a difficult time. And as he begins to speak to me about the family who was going through the difficult time, he literally spent the next several minutes telling me everything he was doing for that family to eliminate to alleviate the hard times that the family was going through. At the end of the conversation, I thought, who cares? Whenever the person left, Jack said, they're just a blowhard. It's terrible to say, but it happens. I mean, you know, you talk to people and yeah, we gave so-and-so some money. Right. Why do I need to know that? Amen. Well, yeah, we did such and such. You know, we were taking care of this. And yeah, we were presented with this need and we went ahead and took care of that need. Listen, it's wonderful that you did that. It's very kind of you. It was very benevolent of you. But as you have done that, why do you need to sound your own horn? Right. I mean, do we need to start calling you Brian? You know, I mean, do you need to tell us how great you are? Do you need to tell us how wonderful you are? Why is it that you have to work into conversation just how generous and kind and good and benevolent you are to people? That is what the hypocrites do. The hypocrites let everyone know, I'm about to be kind, I'm about to be generous, and I don't want anyone to miss it. Here's what we know. We know that there are people who are like that. And here's what we also know. We also know if we ever struggle with that. You know, I just want somebody to know that I'm a really good person. I just want somebody to know that I did a really good deed. I just want somebody to know that I was really kind and I was really generous and I really helped someone out when they were in a time of need. Maybe whenever I was kind of struggling myself. I just want someone to know. Listen, Christ said to the disciples that they may have the glory of men. He says, verily I say unto you, they have their reward. So when somebody should hear the trumpet being played in the synagogue or in the streets, and they look and, oh, there's so-and-so giving to the charity there, giving to the synagogue, giving to the church, whatever it may be. Oh, there they are, huh? Look how much they've contributed. Listen, whatever the person may say by way of a kind word, that is all the reward that person gets for their act of generosity. I don't know about you, but so far this is sounding kind of empty, eternally speaking. I mean, you have no reward when you do this to be seen of men. And when you sound your own trumpet, the only glory you're going to get out of this is what the people say. But I've learned this, that people forget fairly quickly, and so really it's not even a long-term reward that you get out of the deal. Because someone can always outgive you and out-impress other people. Amen. And then you're left sitting going, wow, I just got rid of that kind of money that I could have used, and they're not even remembering, and they're not even impressed anymore. So that's how giving is not supposed to look in our Christian life and in our Christian service. It's not supposed to be about, look at how much I gave, or look at how much I contribute, or how much we did for someone else. But notice in verse number 3, this is what it's supposed to look like. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth. We understand the picture here, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Most of us have two hands.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a right hand, we've got a left hand. The right hand being the dominant hand for most of us. And it's the right eye and the right hand that Christ addressed in chapter 5. So now he says in chapter 6, verse number 3, when you do give alms, when you do give to charity, when you are generous, when that right hand would be extended in generosity to an institution, to a person, to whatever it may be, here's what you do. You do it in such a way that the left hand doesn't even know what your right hand did. What does that seem to signify? It seems to signify this, some discretion and some discreetness in how you give. Being discreet with what you do by way of generosity, by way of kindness and benevolence. I don't know about you, but it's kind of hard for my right hand to be doing something. And if my left hand had an ability to recognize, it'd be kind of hard for the right hand to do something and the left hand not know it was doing something. So the point is this, be discreet in what you do. You're not doing this for the praise of anyone. You're not doing this to be seen of anyone. You just want to be discreet. You want to be like those men that I spoke of just a moment ago. You simply want to do what you're supposed to do because it's what you were called to do, and you don't have to have the fanfare or the recognition of anyone else in your life to cause you to do what you've done. We're not going to change anything, okay? We're really not. Because no matter what you do, people can still mess it up. Okay? We're not going to change anything in what we do, but I got to thinking about this. What is the purpose of passing the offering plate? Well, I've already mentioned it, that for some people, it's to be seen of men. I don't know about you, and I truly don't know about you. But I find of myself, whenever I put the offering envelope in the offering plate as it goes by, I want it to be upside down. Why? Because I don't think anybody needs to know what I'm giving except as to whether or not we're being obedient to what we're giving. Listen, if you're the kind and you're just absent-minded and you don't think about it and sometimes it goes in face forward and sometimes it goes in face down, that's fine. I'm not getting on to anyone. But what I'm saying is this. If the offering plate goes by and you intentionally put the offering envelope up, that's not discreet giving. You understand what I'm saying? It's just take the money. Because I want to be obedient, not because I need to be seen of anyone as to what it is I'm doing. I remember as a kid, whenever I'd get to put money in the offering plate, if it was anything over a $1 bill, I wanted to make sure that it was not folded up. I wanted to make sure that it was completely unfolded, flattened as much as I could. Why? So that somebody could see that I put in a $5 bill or a $10 bill. That was not discreet in my giving. You understand what I'm saying? And don't think for a moment there are not still people who struggle with this, that they want to make sure that the person knows, hey, that wasn't a $1 bill, that was a $20 bill, or that was a $50 bill. Listen, if all you do is put cash in the plate, by all means, if nothing else, crumple it up to where nobody knows what it is you're giving. Because it ought to be so discreet that the left hand's over here going, what's the right hand doing? Oh, don't worry about it. Oh, okay. There needs to be no show in this. And so I was thinking about this. Okay, we're going to keep passing the offering plate. Why? Because we could foul this up no matter what we did. But it ought to be that we could simply set up a contributions box somewhere in the church and people could pass by and put it in. Why? Because we don't need to be seen of men when it comes to our act of obedience and being charitable with what we've been given. Give in obedience, and then give above and beyond that when the Lord speaks to your heart and prompts you to do it. And when it happens, just let that be the end of it. You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to tell anyone. Just do it. And keep your mouth shut. I'm just trying to explain this in practical terms so that we all know what I'm talking about and what I believe the Scripture is reminding us of. Be discreet. Don't make it your business to tell everybody what your business is. So like when it comes to giving, Susie knows how much we give. Why? Because she's my wife and she ought to have an idea as to what we give. And I tell our children what we give, not so that we can impress them with, look at how much Dad and Mom give to the church. No, but I want them to understand the act of obedience. I want them to understand that, listen, this is an act of obedience and this isn't ours. And we want to give it to the Lord. And we want the Lord to be able to control all of our finances, not just the first 10%, but the rest of the 90%. That belongs to Him as well. And as the Lord moves and as the Lord leads, we're going to give. And kids, we want you to be aware of this. But I'm not doing this, kids, so that you'll know. I just want the kids to be reminded of the fact that we're supposed to be generous. And so here's a snapshot of what we do to try to be obedient to that. There are times that the Lord has moved upon my heart, as the Lord has moved upon your heart, to do kind things for certain people. The only person I need to share that with is Susie. Just so that she knows, hey, this happened. But I don't need to work it into conversation and let you guys know, oh, did you know that, by the way? Because whenever I do that, you know what I've done? I have sacrificed and forfeited all eternal reward for my act of generosity. Period. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. Now, is it possible that, kind of like those men who served in the military, that it's going to be found out? Did you know that they're highly decorated? Is it possible that things that leak from their past and begin to be made known, that it begins to surface and you begin to hear these things? Is it possible that say, our generosity may be found out about from time to time? That's possible. But that's a vast difference in that and the person just saying, do you know how kind and generous and giving I am? Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to bore us tonight. I promise you I'm not. But I want us to think about this. There are times that I've heard some of you all say, yeah, I gave something to such and such. And you're not trying to impress me. You were just making a statement in passing. And you truly didn't mean anything by it. You're just, yeah, that's what we did. Okay. There's a vast difference between that and where did that come from? See, Christ said this in verse number 4 by way of recognition, that thine alms may be in secret. What we do in secret. We don't do it again for publicity. We don't do it for the praise of men. And he says that thine alms may be in secret, and thy Father which seeth it, seeth in secret, himself shall reward thee openly. Here's what Christ said. When you and I give our alms, when you and I are charitable, and we do this in the right manner, when we do this in the right fashion, here is what happens. Our Father, which is in heaven, sees what we've done in secret, and He will reward us or He will bless us openly. Well, how does He do that? I don't know. But He says He does it. So I'll just take it at face value and says He does it. And say that He does it. And says that He does it. I don't know why I'm struggling tonight, but anyways. He rewards us openly. It's not my concern as to what He will do for me openly. Okay, now, God, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Now, I need you to hurry and reward me openly. That's not why I do it. But you and I are supposed to simply give, walk away from it, be done with it, and not ever have to talk about it again in order for us to be happy.
Right. Amen.
Just be done with it. And whenever we do it right, somehow God manages to reward us and to bless us in ways that are obvious and open to others. We don't need to allow the pride to get into our lives by way of giving, by way of generosity. We don't want to give for the wrong reasons. We don't want to give with wrong motives. We don't want to give so that we can be seen of men, so that somehow we'll be praised or glorified at a church or in the community, whatever it may be. No, we give simply because this is what I'm supposed to do, and I'll be so discreet that my left hand doesn't even know what my right hand is doing, and we just call it good. It ought to be that for you and I, we're just content to just do what we do and to have done what we've done because that's what we were called upon to do. I don't need the glory. I don't need the fame. I don't need the accolades of anyone. I just want to be obedient and be done with it. And if you ever find yourself struggling to let somebody know just how good you are, just remember, whatever glory you get from them, that is all the glory you'll get out of the deal, and that'll pass far faster than you want it to. Just do it in secret, let God see it, and then let Him reward it at the right time and in the right manner. All right? Let's all stand tonight and have a word of prayer. Father, I pray that you'd help us tonight to be careful in our manner of giving, Lord, to always use caution.